So we were just waiting for one more cinnamon.
Yep. You're the one. First order of business is to review and approve the minutes from the November 19th, 2015 meeting. They were in your packet. So I need a motion to approve those.
Chairman, I'll.
Representative Carlson moves the minutes. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion to rail. Next is, I'll introduce Mr. Dubinger for item number two, which is review and approve the resolutions establishing the subcommittees. Mr. Dubinger.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. In your packet, there are five resolutions that reestablish subcommittees of the LCC to carry out work that's assigned by law to the LCC. LCC 1, all of these documents track changes. They're all the same language as existed in the prior biennium, except for date changes and for the chair rotation. We got a request from Mr. Matzik yesterday to modify the language for the Senate appointments so that they would come from the majority and minority leader rather than the subcommittee on committees. We implemented that change from what the packet that was sent out to the members yesterday. LCC 1 reestablishes the Subcommittee on Employee Relations, which reviews and can provide interim approval of the state labor contracts. We changed the dates and changed the chair to be from the House. Mr. Chair, do you want to go through all of them and adopt them as one?
Is that what the group would like to do?
Okay.
Yeah, we'll do that.
If there aren't any questions, the second resolution reestablishes the Subcommittee on Administrative Rules. This carries out the duties of the LCC with respect to the administrative rulemaking process for state agencies. This subcommittee has not met for several years, but the LCC has established it so it exists in case it's needed. Sometimes the House and the Senate appoint members. Others, they might wait until there's an actual need. But the LCC has responsibility to, or has the authority to, object to a rulemaking by a state agency. He can also file objections to rulemaking, and so for that reason, the LCC delegates its responsibility to the subcommittee. Again, we only change the chair rotation and the dates.
Thank you, Mr. Hubinger. So, since it has been inactive, if we wanted to make it active, how would that work? At any time, could the members be appointed to look at that, or how does that? Could it be during interim? Can you explain that a little bit?
Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, by reestablishing the subcommittee and appointing the members, the subcommittee could take action at any time during this biennium.
So if it were in August or whenever, okay.
Yes. The third resolution reestablishes the subcommittee, establishing the advisory committee to the LCC Office on the Economic Status of Women. This carries out the responsibility of the LCC with respect to reporting monitoring the economic status of women in Minnesota. That's provided in statute. The subcommittee has four members. It meets only occasionally. And we just have to update the dates in the resolution. The fourth resolution is new language that reestablishes a subcommittee that hasn't existed in several years to provide oversight and support for the revisor statutes. This subcommittee was a part of the discussion in the search process when Paul Marinek was appointed as the new revisor. He thought it'd be helpful for the revisor's office in working more closely with the legislature. Leadership agreed that would be a good change, and so this language is proposed here. It would consist of four members, two from the House and two from the Senate. The fifth resolution follows the fourth one and reestablishes the Reference Library Subcommittee, also consisting of four members, and provides oversight and support for the Reference Library. This group has not existed in several years as well.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
Representative Pepin moves to approve LCC 1 through 5. Is that the way to say it, Mr. Hubinger?
Yes.
Resolutions 1 through 5. Discussion on those resolutions? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails and the resolutions are adopted. Next is item number three, review and accept the fiscal year 2015 financial audit. Ms. Henry?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Diane Henry Wagenstein. I'm the Deputy Director with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. As part of my duties, I oversee the Legislative Fiscal Service Office that provides the fiscal services for the joint offices and commissions. So before you have an audit that was done for fiscal year 15, the LCC has an audit of its financial records done every other fiscal year. So our practice is that we issue an RFP. Proposals are received and assessed. A contract is issued then. Abdu Ackermeyer was contracted for this particular audit that was conducted for the fiscal year ending of June 30th of 2015. A copy of the management letter is also included in the audit as well. Unfortunately, any representatives from Abdu Ackermeyer could not be here today because they had scheduled conflicts, but they'd be happy to come before this committee, this commission, if needed in the future, so if so desired by members. As stated in the management letter, Abdu Ackermeyer found no deficiencies in our internal controls, had no audit findings, had no instances of noncompliance with government audit standards. I'd like to take a little bit of time and recognize the day-to-day work of all the offices of the underneath the LCC that do fiscal-related work. You know, it's their work that makes this audit process happen clean, and I'd especially like to recognize the work of our fiscal assistants in the legislative fiscal service office, LCC fiscal service office. Thank you. I stand for questions if anybody has any.
Members have any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Yep.
Mr. Chair, might I just mention that this is actually, and I understand I'm new to the committee. This is the first commission meeting that we've had since I was back on the commission, and this is the first time I've seen this, so I would have appreciated just a little more information beforehand, because it's a little much, you know, there's a couple of pages to go through quickly. And so it would be nice if in the future we could get some of this in advance. Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
yep, Senator.
If I could ask, why do we have an increase in our net fund balance? Is there a targeted amount that we should be working with? How frequently does this fluctuate? I'm looking at particular on page 16. Our unrestricted net position increased by $300,000. Will we see years where that will decline? How much do we need to keep sort of in that unrestricted position? Being new to the committee, I haven't oriented myself to the finances.
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, I could look in a little deeper into this. It was from fiscal year 2015 when we did this, but in simply put, that also includes any type of carry forward funds that would be carried forward from year to year. That also includes some of our commissions at that time period had 3 years of appropriations where their appropriations extended 3 years. So it includes that. It includes any other type of appropriations that don't cancel within a year. So we do also have in that, it's not only general funds, there's also federal funds that we had a federal grant in there for one of our commissions that was pretty substantial and other things then too. I'd be happy to provide more details if you're looking for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I Senator. Could just request like the last two audits, that's really all I need to help orient to what some of these numbers might historically look like.
Sure.
Yeah. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, is there a need to adopt this or approve and accept, I guess, is what a review and accept was the...
Yep.
This
yes.
At this meeting, is there some need? Yeah. Is there a could we lay it on the table or lay it over or whatever
certainly.
The case may be, so that we can take a look at it?
Yeah, I think
all
that's
right.
fine.
If you need a motion on that, I make whatever appropriate motion.
I don't necessary. Think we do necessarily. We just won't take action to accept it. So,
Mr. Chair,
Yes.
Thank you. I agree with Senator Fischbach. There's no way we could act on this, just having received it this moment. And the other thing is, it's a year old. You know, we have it's the transmittal letter is dated January 21st, 2016. This is for fiscal year ending June 30th, 2015. I have a feeling we've got another one, either that we have received or will receive shortly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hartman, we will be doing a fiscal audit. We do it every other odd year, so we will be doing one in fiscal year 17 that ends on June 30th of 2017. So we'll have an audit of those financial records to present to the commission. We're anticipating next spring, next year, next session of the fiscal year 17.
Is there any reason it's taken us a year to act on this?
Mr. Chair, Senator, Representative Hartman, this commission meets intermittent, and so this hasn't been a part of the agenda until now.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions or discussion on that? And then we'll move on to the next thing, which is review and approve the public member lodging reimbursement rate. Ms. Henry Wagenstein.
Mr. Chair, members, also in front of you, you have a resolution of numbered LL6 and a memo regarding the LCC public lodging limits. That memo is dated February 13th. So currently the LCC public lodging limit is 110, including taxes and fees for our public members. This limit was set in 2009. It was at that time an average of between the House and Senate, what the lodging limits are set by the rules committees for the House and Senate. At that time, the House was 120 and the Senate was 100. Since that time, the federal per diem lodging rate for the Twin Cities Metro has increased to 145. So we've been hearing some concerns from some of our public members that participate in our various commissions, that concerns about the lodging limit not being able to, reasonable enough to meet the lodging cost, and they've been having to pay out of their pocket on some of their lodging cost funds because we only pay up to the limit. Also, too, public members on executive agency commissions do not have lodging limits. Instead, they are submit reimbursements for reasonable lodging expenses by statute. They're allowed by that one. So recently, we've done a survey of downtown St. Paul hotels, and we found that to be an average discount rate 152. And then similar, we did a similar survey on a radius of 13 miles and also found about similar results then too. That information's included in your packet as well. So the LCC processes expenses for about 33 commissions, more or less. We have about 12 that are partial or all public members. The total lodging cost for the LCC in fiscal year 2016 was approximately $18,000 for public members. We recommend an increase to 150, which would mean a projected increase of $6,500 for we're anticipating for the public members underneath the I'm sorry, the expenses underneath the commissions underneath the LCC. That would be about $3,500 of general funds and $3,000 of non-general funds. So this increase would help citizens participate that participate and dedicate their time into to the work of the legislature. It would help them. Also, just to note that the legislative members' limits would continue to be based upon what the rules of the House and Senate would be. Currently, that's 125 for the House and 100 for the Senate.
Discussion from members. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Speaker, you mentioned at the last part that it's the limit is 125 in the House and 100 in the Senate, and we spent some time looking at this too for our House rules and making our decisions about lodging. And I know that Capitol Ridge, Kellyanne, has said that they would lock in $125. So this seems, even though I know it's not a ton of money, it seems like if in the past we'd kind of made an average of the two, this seems a little out of line with that, and it can drive the budget, and it can drive the House and the Senate budgets up if we make an increase of $40. So I guess, Mr. Speaker, my preference would be to limit it to somewhere either an average or maybe even 125 what the House limit is, because I know that the Capitol Ridge will honor that that pledge. So I would, I guess I would move to change that 150 to 125.
You would move to adopt the resolution with the change of 150 to 125?
Correct.
Okay. Representative Pepin makes that motion. Discussion on that motion? Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Pepin, does the 125 include tax and fees? Or, I don't know, do we pay for parking down there now? They got, see, they got a gate up. I mean, what are, that are there any additional costs?
Ms. Henry Wagenstein.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, that would, I mean, up to the resolution, the way it states right now, it includes taxes and fees. So the 125 would, we also surveyed the Kellyanne or Capitol Ridge in and their discount rate we found to be 127. It does not include parking. Parking would be additional expense that would, could be reimbursed.
Potentially.
Yeah, I think
there'd
be $14 worth.
Yeah, I mean, when we talked with them, they said that they would honor the $125, and that does include the taxes. I don't know why it's different.
This says 128, but
well, maybe we did a better job on negotiating.
the house is very efficient.
Probably.
Chair.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, and to Representative Pepin. So do we know, will they know that they can get that rate at that place? I mean, this is the public coming down, so I don't know what the process is if they just go down and find a hotel. You know what I'm saying?
That
so
may
I'm
be
just
a question.
That
question. Ms. Henry Wagenstein.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazalka, we typically will communicate, our commissions will communicate to our public members what the lodging limit rate is with new freshman members that come in. We kind of go through the process, but yes, we do let the members know about the lodging limit and ask them, both in writing, we have on our directions on our expense form, but we also tell our members to please negotiate, ask for those discount rates at that time.
Representative Carlson.
Chairman, is there sort of an assumption then that everybody would be staying at the Kelly Inn, and what if there's no room in the inn? You know, they have, I know a lot of members that stay there during the session. I just don't know what kind of capacity they have, but I can see a situation where, as she just pointed out, a member of the public might come down and there might not be a room available there, or they might have chosen another place that's somewhat convenient. I just want to be responsive to the needs of the public so that they're not having to underwrite the cost. The increase seemed to me to be relatively modest when you look at the overall budget.
Leave it to Joyce.
I think you said 6,000 was something like
6,500.
But at any rate, I think there's sort of an assumption then that everybody's going to stay at the Kelly. And I've got no problem with the Kelly. I've never stayed there, but
but it seems nice.
And I'm Metro.
Senator Fishbach.
Mr. Chair, I just I believe that probably 125 might be an issue. Actually, I think the Senate is even talking about increasing fares per night because we've had issues with bonding tours where they can't find a hotel that would fit in our 100. So there may be a consideration where we are considering moving ours up so that our members don't end up having to, members and staff, having to cover part of their hotel rooms. So that may be, using that average might change in a few weeks or whenever we take a look at that.
Representative Pepin.
President Fishbach, do you have an idea of what you're going to be raising it to in the Senate?
And Mr. Chair, I guess the idea, Mr. Chair, could potentially be 150.
Oh, okay. Well,
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. Well, given that, I will remove my request for 125, although I do still think that we need to keep an eye on that going forward. It is a large increase, but with the concerns of other members, I certainly don't want to inconvenience the public. But I do think that we should be mindful of the limits that we're setting. And being a member myself who has to frequently get a hotel since I don't qualify for an apartment here, I want to be sure that members of the public can find housing. So I would remove the 125 and just go back to the moving the original.
Okay. Representative Pepin moves LCC 6 as it was in your packet with a $150 per night for in-state lodging. Any discussion on that motion, Senator Bach?
In support of it, Mr. Speaker, you know, this hasn't been adjusted since 2009. And we all know what's happened to lodging costs, both rent and hotel stays over the last 7 years. So I just want to speak in support of it.
Okay. Representative Gazelle, yeah, or Senator Gazelle, sorry.
Either way. I want to speak in support of it, too. And, I think about this as the public. We're asking them to do the service. They come down. Kelly's filled, whatever. I want to make sure that, you know, if they get a rate of 125, we're not paying 150. We're paying the rate. And so I'm supportive.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of adoption of LCC 6 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the resolution is adopted.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It just occurs to me that the LCC doesn't meet very often, but there are a lot of new members on the LCC, and it might be useful for them if we had kind of an LCC 101 at some point that just kind of, unless Mr. Hubinger wants to meet individually with people, to just all the things that the LCC does and all the different commissions that are under the LCC.
Certainly. Yeah. Mr. Hubinger, did you have one other thing that you wanted to talk about?
Mr. Chair, I was just going to point out that the LCC directors are working on their proposed budgets for 18-19. We need to get some direction from leadership about legislative budgets generally and how our budgets fit in with the House and the Senate.
Okay. And then we did have a member of the public did pass a note to me, Mr. Heller. And while we're not going to take public testimony, I will ask your question for you because I think it's a fair one. His question was, are the handouts for this meeting online and are they accessible to those that have hearing impairments or visually impaired?
Mr. Chair and members, the LCC, like the House and Senate, tries to make all of its documents accessible, and the practice here for this commission is to post the documents after the meeting, okay. And we'll be doing that within a day or two,
okay.
And they will be accessible.
All right. Is there a way to get that done prior to the meeting?
We could certainly change our practice and do that, yes.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Any other questions or concerns from members? Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, kind of to that point, I think it could be a little misleading to the public if the documents are posted before the meeting, and then the documents end up being amended at the meeting. Might be a little bit confusing, but I don't feel strongly about it, but I don't know how much additional work we create and people look before and that the action's something different. Might be a little confusing.
Right. Yeah, I think they would just, you'd have to update them if there were changes made.
They'd be in there.
Yeah, right. So that would be acceptable, I assume. What's that?
If I could speak briefly, the legislature decided 2 years ago to make sure that struck through an underlined language got read out loud in HTML. If you go to the Data Practice Commission on March 3rd, I have some handout documents there from Jason. He's the one that said in his electronic email that now, until documents are put in on a PDF and HTML, they don't become public until they get on the floor. That's just for a reference piece. Also, I need to add, I think this commission needs to consider contact technology accessibility law. This was statute 16E, subdivision 9, which is only for state agencies, and start applying it to the legislature, including people that use legacy money. So my understanding, there's some opposition to the law about legacy money. People that use sales tax.
He's in Marty's.
Are not required to consider content accessibility law. There's many nonprofit organizations here. They come to the Minnesota legislature. However, they are exempt from Minnesota statute 16E03 and data practice law. And I believe if it's not searchable or fully accessible, is it really transparent?
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Hubinger, maybe you and I can meet on that sometime offline. So any other questions from members? Sounds great. Then anything else? We're adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.